Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to season three. And today we have an episode on one of my favorite areas, and that is the good girl conditioning. But first off, here is one mum hack that I swear by. It is a post-it note in every room that you regularly forget why you were there or what you were doing in that room. This is when you walk into the kitchen to get the dirty tea towel, but then you find yourself deep cleaning the fridge, and then you never actually take the tea towels to the laundry, and you never actually put on the load of washing that really needs to go on for your child to have clean clothes tomorrow. Then you wonder how you got so sidetracked and what happened. Okay, so all you need is a stack of sticky notes and a pen. You leave sticky notes and a pen in the rooms that are the worst that you know that you get lost in. So the reason that this helps is because when you pause to write down what you meant to do, your brain doesn't have to hold it, and it gives you breadcrumbs to trail back to the task. So for example, let's say you go into the kitchen to get the dirty tea towel. Then you start deep cleaning the fridge. You need to think, okay, one, I'm getting distracted. Do I want to tackle this? Now for me, sometimes I enjoy getting distracted and I actually don't want to stop what I'm doing because it feels important. And I know that I'm doing my ADHD thing, but I still want to do the fridge because it feels like I really want to at that time. So I just put a sticky note and put, haven't done washing. Write something down and put it somewhere visible. So then later on, you look at the note and you go, oh, I never actually did that washing load. So get it out. Post-it notes, great system. Keep your pen and your sticky note in the room. Okay, let's kick off one of my favorite subjects, good girl recovery. The ADHD Mums podcast, we dismantle unrealistic expectations to start with. We name what's going on in our brains and our lives, and we rebuild motherhood around what we need. We do not do what the world expects of us. We build it around us. Today, we are going deep, which is where I love to go, and we are talking about good girl conditioning. It's very close to my heart. So many of us do this and we carry this. You may not know that you do it until you listen to this episode, or you know that you do it and you're listening because you're like, oh God, I know that I do this. Please help me. Okay, so ADHD Mum Season 3, we do not talk about the problem without a solution. We are going into what the problem is, who does it, how it works, and then we are going strategy, strategy, strategy. I'm pumped. We know that good girl conditioning and motherhood and ADHD are like a pressure cooker. Personal opinion that I believe the definition of insanity is ADHD and perfectionism. Because it's like that combination can be difficult to find joy, to be present, to stop doing all of the things, the list, especially in motherhood. And I talk about that from experience as a perfectionist ADHDer. So we know that ADHD and perfectionism can be quite a insane combination where your own internal drive can really affect you. Now, my perfectionism and ADHD means that, for example, if I think of an idea with the podcast, I write it on a list and I want to action it. And what that means is that my list is about 17,000 things long and I never get to finish it. So that means I've struggled to give myself breaks because I feel like there's always something to be done. But then I trick myself into thinking I will have a break when it's done, but then I put things to the list. If that sounds like you, that can be a part of the perfectionistic ADHD trait. Now, we know that being a perfectionist isn't necessarily an ADHD trait, but being perfectionist is a personality trait. And if you combine that with ADHD, you can have a really strong internal drive that can be hard to switch off. So you got those mums that say, I can't sit down with my kids to play a board game or read books because there's always something to do. And that then moves into this good girl conditioning. And the good girl conditioning with motherhood and ADHD is then creates this pressure to be everything to everyone. Now we're talking about people pleasing, perfectionism, pressure, and how difficult it is to put yourself on your own to-do list. When you have this kind of conditioning or mindset, personality trait, putting yourself first, doing some self-care seems really difficult, if not impossible. If you struggle with putting yourself first, and when people say, just build in some time to go for a walk, and you just can't even fathom it, you may have some of this conditioning. So, good girl conditioning is not a diagnosis. It's the set of learned behaviors. So it might be a voice in your head that says, Don't make a fuss. Be grateful. Keep it together. Don't say no. Smile and nod. It can sound like words in your brain like, you should be able to manage this. You can't ask for help. They'll think you're lazy. You don't have time to rest. There's too much to do. Don't you sit down. You don't have time for that. But here's the thing. This conditioning wasn't chosen, but it is absorbed. From friends, family, religion, culture, it can get wired very young. However, if it is wired in you, in this good girl conditioning, it can really affect your nervous system, your self-worth, and your overall sanity. Where I talk about my definition of insanity is having ADHD and perfectionism and then never being able to, like, chasing perfectionism, but having poor executive function, a hyperactive brain, that can just feed this beast where it's never enough. Now, where did it come from? We've been told for centuries, directly and indirectly, that women are here to serve. Now, this ties in with the Mother's Day just passed, because it's this whole thing around honor the mothers for one day, but then they can just serve for the rest of the time. There's this society's conditioning around women, girls being helpful, polite, small, beautiful, grateful, compliant. Again, this feeds into why some girls find it difficult to get diagnosed as ADHD or autistic, for example, because their teacher's report might not back it up, that might get dismissed, whatever it is. Now, I have three children, and I have two, one boy and one girl, who have the good girl, good boy personality trait. So I absolutely understand that it can be there in boys. I have one externalizing boy who is a bit more of that typical ADHD presentation. So when I talk about girls, I just mean that it's more like they tend to succumb more to this personality trait, but of course it can be there in boys too. Now, from ages 0 to 7, our brains really soak up all of the information around us, which is why I talk about early intervention being so important. Okay, how do we get the good girl, good boy conditioning? So it appears from research, which I can put into the show notes, which is by Sanders and Munford, 2008. And what this shows is that this good girl identity is more of a social strategy to navigate around authority figures. So you can perceive the expectation, think about what is going to give you a safe response from an adult. And the study really looks at how girls use this identity to maintain control, self-image, when they're dealing with adult expectations, especially outside the home. So where would you find this really comes in hard? Probably from school, I would say, where they really reward chart compliance. The study suggests that it's more from learned behavior than genetics. The other thing is as well that we look at the women and the caregiving, the emotional labor, and that kind of looked the way that we saw our parents, our mum, being a good mother. And it shows that really females start to internalize these good girl roles. Even, for example, like I remember being at school, and so we're talking early 2000s. I remember going to a career counselor in grade 10, and the teacher said to me that I really need to think about, if I want to be a mum, what careers would really work. I'm sure they don't do this anymore at schools, but I'm just saying the conditioning is there, and where do they get it from? Generally outside the home. That is what the study says. However, that is not to say that genetics don't play a role. I do believe they play a role, but it's very difficult to know which comes from which, but there are studies that show that it also can be a learned behavior. So our brains from 0 to 7 are soaking up lots of information. You are going to be more likely to develop good girl or good boy conditioning if your big feelings as a child were dismissed from 0 to 7. For example, you're being dramatic. If you were praised for being easy or mature for your age, if you learnt that saying no means rejection and you shouldn't say no to adults because then they rejected you, and if you learned that saying yes is going to get praise, that is going to also create that good girl conditioning. You may have been told directly, good girls don't answer back. Good girls don't say no. Again, if you had sensory issues, for example, there's nothing wrong with your shoes. Good girls just put them on. So some of us would have multiple kids, boys and girls. a lot of the boys have, if they're neurodivergent, more noticeable traits. They may be more physically hyperactive. They may be more noticeably needing attention, or they demand attention. So if you have a daughter who is more internalized, you may praise them. Thank you for waiting. You may ask them to help. So we may say things to our daughters like, oh, thanks for waiting. Oh, you're so helpful. Thank you so much. I do notice, if I'm honest, my daughter taking in a lot of that already, because she has two brothers who demand a lot of my attention. And for safety reasons, I have to give it to them. I can't ask them to wait because I know that a lot of it will get bigger because it's more of that externalizing behavior. So through that, I know that I give her more attention when it's quiet and generally she has to wait. I feel sorry because sometimes she will come and ask for things that seem urgent to her, but with what I'm dealing with her brothers, it doesn't seem urgent to me and I have to ask her to wait. This creates that good girl conditioning that I don't want from her. But with multiple children with different needs, if I'm here or by myself, it's really difficult to navigate. And I try later on to really spend time with her when I can. But it's tricky because often by the time the boys have settled down, I'm so done. I just want to have a break. What I'm trying to say is I get it. It's really tricky. And if you have been inadvertently giving those messages to your children, boys or girls, just know that I do it too. When you do have a child that is waiting, not to praise it, like, how do you stop the conditioning of the good girl behavior? Now, that is a whole nother episode. If you would like me to go into that, I can. Write me an email, drop me a line. I'm going to have a list of a question jot form in the show notes and ask me to do an episode on that. But that's a whole nother thing. So for example, my dad had a real thing with whinging. If I wanted him to like me, I had to be happy and helpful. And so I knew that if I started whinging, saying it wasn't fair, I wasn't in a good mood, I felt upset about something, he would reject me and be like, you're in a bad mood, come back when you're feeling better. Now, he was a great dad, and I'm not saying that this is malicious, but this can just be those messages around when you send a child into their room for time out, come back when you're ready to say sorry, come back when you thought about what you've done. Kids can't actually process that emotion, depending on what it is, alone. So they actually need an adult to hear them, help them through it. I didn't have that, so I would just suppress the whinging or what I was upset about, and then he would give me positive responses for going back into that happy, helpful frame, but I was just masking my upsetness or learning not to show it, which was contributing to the good girl conditioning that I received. So if you grew up in a family that rewarded you for being helpful or punished emotional needs, the chances are that you learned to adapt, to shrink your needs, to push them down, to wait. And that was really internalized. And that happens at school, I believe, because of the way a lot of schools run is to get compliance from a group rather than to actually shape on individual needs. So the rewards charts that a lot of schools still do are based on compliance. So then if you have a negative consequence for making a fuss, not going along, whatever it is, you are sometimes at schools punished or not rewarded and watching other people get rewarded. And this plays into this good girl, good boy conditioning. Now, I really want to clarify that perfectionism, good girl conditioning, is not a neurodivergent trait. So when I mention it, if you do these things, you can be neurotypical. These are just personality traits that link in with neurodivergent traits, which can create a bit of a perfect storm. So if we know that good girl conditioning is basically in five different parts, chronic people pleasing, suppression of needs and boundaries, hypervigilance to others' moods or expectations, perfectionism, fear of mistakes, or masking distress to be likable or to avoid trouble, those are the five biggest types of good girl conditioning that I see. So neurodivergent people, particularly autistic or ADHD people, really are affected, I believe, more by this conditioning than neurotypical people because they're often socialized early to behave in specific, more appropriate ways. So you're being praised, for example, putting your shoes on, even if the socks were crinkly and you had major sensory issues. you're praised for smiling and looking happy and being compliant, even if you're feeling so upset inside, and you're being praised for suppressing emotion or going along with things that you actually don't want to do, or being agreeable, helping others when you actually don't want to even do that at all. The other link to neurodivergence is really around that shame part of being neurodivergent. So let's say being corrected, misunderstood, or punished for some of those neurodivergent traits. So for example, fidgeting, eye contact, interrupting, talking a lot, lots of excess energy, being told, no, that's wrong, don't do that, or being perhaps not accepted by a group for those traits can mean that you learn that you get to be part of the group if you behave, if you're a good girl. And you start to anticipate what an authority figure would like you to do, and I'm just going to do that because I don't actually know what to do. There can also be a really high camouflage pressure. You notice that particularly with girls and women, they often adapt to the group. They often adapt to expectations. They can become really a high achiever, perfect daughter. And then all of a sudden, that perfect daughter has now had a huge mental breakdown. They don't necessarily choose. They actually cannot continue to mask so heavily at that level. What is important with masking is it's about the gap between your actual personality and the mask that you have. Now, if you are naturally hyperactive, impulsive, oversharing, whatever it is, for you to go somewhere like a school assembly, let's say the neurodivergent woman has to actually put a mask on, which might be significantly different to their real personality. And how big that gap is going to impact how fast they are going to burn out from masking and how hard their burnout will be. If you have a person who's neurotypical and they put on their mask for pickup and it's only 10% different to their actual self, they may not understand how taxing that can be on someone who's neurodivergent. So neurotypical people don't necessarily understand what masking feels like for a neurodivergent person. The other thing is that there is a big fear with neurodivergent people around being not accepted, feeling that others don't approve of them, feeling abandoned, that rejection sensitivity dysphoria can fit in. That can really drive people pleasing and perfectionism. And many late diagnosed women say to me, I always knew I was different. And this has been a relief to know why. So if you have a whole group of people who are neurodivergent, who don't know it, who feel different, they are going to be so much more on edge around doing things that are going to give them negative feedback. Neurotypical people are not generally as driven to people please, and they don't scan the rooms. So many neurodivergent women that I speak to who are late diagnosed talk about scanning rooms for people that are not happy. So if they're at a mum's night, they'll scan the table to see who is not happy with what they're saying. And this is where that whole myth around us lacking empathy, particularly for the autistic community, is so wrong. Often neurodivergent women are very switched on to other people's reactions to them. So we don't want to say that good girl conditioning is a neurodivergent trait because it isn't, but we do know that it affects us differently. And I would argue that it is trickier. If you have ADHD or you're autistic or neurodivergent, you've had trauma, whatever it is, and you have a pattern of good girl conditioning as well, it's going to be really tricky for you to put all this forwards, particularly if you then throw motherhood in the mix. Healing really requires deconditioning and unmasking, and that can be really tricky for late diagnosed women who don't know any different. So why does it break us in motherhood? This is where conditioning explodes, because there's always something to do. There's always someone that needs something. If you've been wired to put everyone before yourself, you don't even feel tired. You just become like invisible. It's hard to even remember what you need. You feel guilty for sitting down at all. If you do take a rest, there can be a shame spiral. You can resent your partner who seems to sit down on his phone quite often. You can wonder why you're falling apart. You could tell yourself that it's because you're not trying hard enough. But we really need to look at this is programming. It isn't an innate personality flaw that can't be fixed. So we can rewrite this. Let's talk strategy, real world tools to get started on your good girl recovery right now. Number one, what do I need? First thing, schedule the question. Have it pop up. Where can you put the question to ask yourself regularly, what do I need? So you may have an alarm on your phone. You may have it programmed into your Apple Watch. You may have it on a sticky note in your bathroom. However you do it. This is what do I need? Not everybody else, what do they need? And then at the end of that, you may have half a second left that you can do a wee. This isn't what should I be doing. This is what do I need? Now, you may not be in a position that you can give yourself what you need today, because I'm going to be really honest. With the way that the world is at the moment, with the amount of stuff that we have on and the cost of living in this country, a lot of people are working a lot. And you are probably listening to this podcast, I would imagine, driving in the shops wherever you are. So you may not be able to give yourself what you need today, but what you have done is you began to reconnect. One of the things that I have really struggled with that I've had to build back in is if I do get time, like a moment by myself, I realized I didn't know what to do. So if you at least know what you need and make it doable, a 5-minute walk, you might have a quick stretch, you might listen to a podcast, whatever it is that you need, just reconnect for a moment about what you may need. 2, we need to get comfortable with disappointing people. Now, this you may find difficult. I actually struggle to even say this paragraph because I do not like disappointing people. But you are not going to be able to meet your needs, I don't believe, in families that I generally see in this podcast community without someone else not getting what they want. Now, that might be your child, your partner, your boss, your extended family, your friend, your neighbor, but you may need to start to think about whether you can be okay with this. But I want to sow the seed that you are allowed to disappoint others. I matter. You may make a goal to disappoint my children slightly every day. For example, it's never enough with kids. You set something up for them, they want to do it every week. Then they come back at you and go, after you finished all these other activities, you haven't done this with me. You said you do that and you haven't. And it's never enough. So I feel like they're going to just say it anyway. So I may as well actually build in something that I want to do. So think about whether you can disappoint people and whether you're okay with that. I had this moment with my partner where I realized I kept waiting for everything to be perfect before I left. And then I felt like he made me feel guilty then leaving because he didn't seem happy about it. But I flipped it around in my mind and I reframed it. I don't need him to be okay with me leaving for me to leave. Now, he wasn't saying not to go. He just wasn't overtly happy for me. And that fed into my guilt. And then I felt like I couldn't leave because he's saying it's okay, but his face says it doesn't. Why am I waiting for his face to be okay for me to leave? Like, of course he doesn't want me to leave. I don't want him to leave. When he leaves, he still leaves. So I've had to really get comfortable with putting my needs first to disappoint somebody sometimes. You may want to have a look at asking for help. Now, asking for help is a skill set. But I also want to remind you that's hard to do. Now, good girls do not like asking for help. They don't even want to ask a friend for help. When someone says, do you need anything? They just say no. A lot of us would rather do anything else but ask for help. We just don't like putting people out. Asking for help is actually a really healthy tool. Saying to somebody, to a friend, look, I'm at capacity. I'm going to lose my mind. Can we change the plan? Or saying to somebody else, can we trade pickups today? I don't think I can do it. Now, a lot of women that I talk to say things to me like, I don't have time for a breakdown. I was having the biggest mental breakdown of my life and I took my kids to school, packed their lunches, came home and cried. Nobody even knew because I pushed it down. Now, those are the women that also sometimes tell me they end up in hospital for 6 weeks because you can't sustain that. Doing everything at your own detriment is a very good girl way of looking at things. If someone asks you, do you need any help? And you do, start practicing. I actually would love some help. And receive the help and be okay with it. And I know that's tricky. I'm not expecting everybody to be able to do this straight up. I'm just showing you things to start to sow the seeds. You also might want to have a look at being good enough over being perfect. Now, perfectionism can be a trauma response and it can be you trying to earn safety. But earning safety, like being perfect so then I'm safe from this adult or I know I'm going to get really positive responses, is really a mirage. Like we're never going to get there. But as we try and get there, it's going to steal our peace. So this moment today that we're in, this walk down to the backyard with our child and our dog, this sitting down and reading a book with them and looking in their eyes for 5 minutes, this can be taken by perfectionism. You can't sit down because you don't have time because you've got to clean out this cupboard or deep clean the fridge. Perfectionism really steals a lot of our inner peace. And it can really help to look at your values. I have a values planner on my website. It goes into stripping back what are your values and how do you make decisions from that place. And that has really changed my life in terms of this spiral. And I actually wrote that workbook, if I'm honest, mostly for myself with what I've learned over the last 3 years with trying to come to peace with this insanity around being a good girl, being perfect, having ADHD, but also trying to be there for my kids and having a moment to myself and my partner and just living, feeling like I'm not just existing for other people. And part of that, I started to write down in my phone at the end of the day what I was proud of. And it made me realize that I would pick out things like read my son a book, gave him a special hug. They weren't like, I didn't isolate 2 hours for each child. They were small, but prioritized that child, that moment over something that really was a perfectionist driven trait, like deep cleaning the fridge because someone was coming over and I didn't want them to see my dirty fridge. Really? Because I never wrote down deep cleaning the fridge as part of what I was proud of. So the fifth point that I want to talk about is tracking what you've done. So perfectionism can really hide wins. And ADHD is we are so bad at celebrating anything. When something good happens, we just go, oh, okay, cool. That should have happened because I put in so much effort to it. Like, I'm not surprised. I reckon ADHD people are particularly bad at celebrating anything. You should have done it quicker. It doesn't even allow me to celebrate. But by tracking and celebrating what you've done, you may be shocked with how much you've carried, created, and how much of that you are really proud of. This recovery work is really big, and it's also really necessary work because we weren't supposed to mother isolated, overextended, and stressed. And if we get down to the truth of it, a lot of women listen to this podcast because they deeply love their kids. But the more that we learn to choose ourselves, the more that our kids will learn to choose themselves. At the moment, I'll be honest, I struggle to choose myself. It's one of my worst traits. I think it's going to be a lifelong challenge for me to choose myself. But I use my kids as fuel to choose myself. So I'll say, hey, Jane, you really need to choose this because my daughter is watching me. My son is watching me. I use them to get started because at the moment it's a struggle. I want to get to a point where I just choose myself, but I'm not there yet. So it's a step process. The more you say no, the more that your kids will see your boundary and they'll be okay with it. There is nothing wrong, and I'm saying this for me more than anyone else, saying to your kids, I'm going to sit over here with a cup of tea and I don't want to be interrupted. Or saying to my child, I'm sorry, I can't listen to that story at the moment. I'm so overloaded. I just need 5 minutes. Before, I would just push all the feelings down, listen to the story, and I'd be overloaded and overloaded and overloaded. And then I just feel really snappy or I go into my cupboard and cry. But the more that we rest, the more that they see us not as machines or invisible humans, invisible robots, we're actually real people. And it's not selfish. It's really, I think, generational repair because I don't want my daughter to be treated as a mother the way I'm treated. But I can't say to her, do this, do that, and then she sees me do the opposite because what she sees me do, that's the stuff sticking. So takeaways, set the what do I need reminder today. Choose one boundary. One thing to do, doesn't matter how small, and set yourself a task to disappoint someone today or this week. Doing lovingly, pick somebody that's easy. I wouldn't pick a child. Maybe pick someone at work that you don't really connect that well with and they want you to go do something with lunch with them and you don't want to. Pick that person to get started with. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much. Please go into the listener jot form and give feedback. Let me know your experience. Ask questions. If you want me to do an episode on how not to condition your child with this good girl, good boy conditioning, let me know. Thank you so much for listening. Please share this episode.